Good morning and welcome. Welcome all. Thank you for being here, whether it's because of or despite of the fact that there's a Bible story involved today. There are some brave UU souls here. Do you remember when Reverend Lara Campbell spoke to us last November? She talked about the joys and the challenges of biblical study. How we lose an important part of our heritage when we don't grapple with our own interpretation of the fundamental stories in the Bible. Her sermon touched something really deep in me. So I thought it might be time to check in with one of these earliest stories and to see what new things they might have to tell me. Cain and Abel were brothers. They were the first brothers of Adam and Eve. Cain worked the land. He was a farmer, and Abel was a shepherd. Long story short, both gave offerings to God. God accepted Abel's gift, but not Cain's. So in a fit of jealous rage, Cain killed Abel. The first fratricide. When God found out, she asked Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And Cain famously answered, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" God was not pleased and exiled Cain to, quote, dwell in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain protested, saying that the punishment was too great to bear because anyone who found him would kill him. God thought about this and said, okay, here's what I'll do. She put a mark on Cain so that whoever found him would know what he did, but would also know that killing him would mean suffering sevenfold vengeance. Wow. So we have fratricide, we have crime, we have punishment. This is one of the earliest stories of justice, vengeance, and justice that trained millions of followers of the three Abrahamic traditions, of which we are all, most of us anyway, a part. So how does our culture mark those who break the law? How do we exile them from our society? How do we mark those whom we judge as having broken faith with us? How do we exile them from our lives? I used to have a friend called Bill. He was kind and generous and funny. We worshiped together, we traveled together, we met each other's families. I thought I knew this man. Then, about 10 years ago, Bill called from jail, accused of sexual assault. This was not something small, like a traffic ticket. And I was shocked. I didn't believe that this gentle gay man could do such a thing. And I had one burning question, of course. What happened? What really happened? But of course, there's no privacy in jail, so I couldn't really ask because he couldn't really tell me. At the time, it didn't seem to matter that I didn't know. I repressed the judgments that were burbling up, and I became my brother's keeper, big time. I wrote him letters, I sent him books and photos, all the while keeping my judgments at bay. Wait till he gets out, I kept telling myself. Then we'll get to the truth. Bill was in jail for 20 months, awaiting trial that never happened. Eventually, on the advice of his lawyer, he pleaded out for time served and is now labeled a sex offender with all the rules and regulations that label implies. Just as God marked Cain, the justice system marked Bill. When he looks for a job, housing, when he wants to move to a different town, his crime, whatever the details are, travel with him for the rest of his life. One of the reasons this is complicated for me is that Bill never told me what happened. He never mentioned it at all. And his avoidance of the subject eventually helped to create a distance between us. I got just one phone call from him after he was freed, but he refused to talk about what he did and whether, in retrospect, he did anything wrong. He wasn't talking about it. He talked in this really breezy way that he had that made me question if he'd really not dealt with whatever had happened at all. This had changed his life completely, but I was on the outside of his process. And that's when my judgment surfaced, right? He left me to reconcile what he had done on my own, done or not done. He had stopped connecting with me, and I stopped trying to connect with him. The stories of the Hebrew Bible are this vast river that lead to a delta full of tributaries. We could talk about the injustices of our criminal justice system. We could talk about how we treat offenders when they leave the system. We could talk about whether gay men have an implied different set of rules and laws that they need to be careful of than the rest of us. But I want to go back to that adolescently snarky yet bewildered question of Cain. Am I my brother's keeper? Well, on first pass, of course we are, right? But the question keeps arising with me. Is there a line beyond which we are not our brother's keeper? Is there really something someone can do that will make me erase them from my life altogether? That certainly seems the case in our global crises when an entire people are blamed for the actions of a small group. And that's what makes these stories like this, with all their rich incoherencies and discrepancies and problems, just as stinging and relevant today as they must have been the first time someone spoke them. The Genesis story allows us to sit in the murkiness of human mistakes and suffering and see our own shadows, our own imperfect compassion. We see how our judgment of others and ourselves is thousands of years old. And through answering the question, what does my brother's keeper mean? Again and again, we struggle for deeper understanding. I haven't written or called Bill in a long time. He hasn't reached out to me. My heart aches for his situation, and it aches for the people who were hurt by his actions. Every time I think of it, my anger and judgment rise up. And then I think of all the times I've hurt someone, unintentionally, or, God forbid, subtly and maybe unconsciously, accidentally on purpose. But that's different from Cain or from Bill, right? I wish I knew. The older I get, the more regrets I accrue, the less certain I am, the more fragile and shaky that protective layer of goodness becomes. Cracks show in hindsight. A reevaluation of past behavior needs my own sense of mercy and forgiveness. The high horse of my youth is dead. What's left? The high horse felt so good. Well, I hope and I pray that I've learned some humility, for one, because in the complexity of our world today, it's oh so easy to fall into shame and blame, hatred, bitterness, and despair, like the rocks in the backpack we don't know we're carrying. It's easy to meet hate with hate, anger with anger, insult with insult. But that ancient, ancestral conditioning, an eye for an eye, is rooted in fear, in self-defense, and in the ever-present need to be in control. To change that deeply rooted pattern requires a daily practice of opening the heart, of dissolving the illusion of separation. It takes inner examination and a radical redefinition of justice and equity, which is our theme for the month. It takes, as Thomas Hubel said, to live in withness, not in witness. Withness. Everyone needs to feel like we belong. I think that's what Cain was missing. God rejected his offering. I think that's how Bill got into so much trouble. And that's why I, so many years later, am still arguing with Bill in my head. Because he cut me out of his life, too. He didn't trust in our brotherhood. The last line of the Zohar, the mystical book of Kabbalah, states, "There is no place where God is not." There is no place where God is not. To fully embody this teaching shatters my deeply held conviction of what it means to be a good person, a godly person. None of us live in a pristine garden. We all live east of Eden. What might the world look like if each of us lived daily as though every being is in our circle of belonging and care? What might the world look like if we acted on the understanding that people need our attention, our tending, and our gifts? The kindness this would engender, the generosity, this seems to me the most radical form of social justice and equity. Alexander Massey wrote, "The source of kindness and the source of justice are, in truth, one source, the only one, the source of love." May the judgments we uncover and the justice we seek be infused with the divine love alive in us and permeating all. May it be so, and amen.